Hello and welcome to this week's Big Boat interview with me, Stuart Campbell. This week I sat down with Lars Windthorst, the new owner of the German shipyard Nobbeskrug. At just 45, Lars has built quite an incredible CV. He was hailed as the new German wunderkind of the tech economy before the dot-com bubble, lost it all, built it all again, bought a superyacht, and now a shipyard. It's a quite incredible story. So without further ado, here is my interview with Lars Windthorst. Lars, thank you very much for sitting down and talking to us. Great to be here in your lovely London offices. I can see a model of your 74-metre yacht Global behind your desk. And she's a Lursen. You now own Nobbeskrug. So is there a new boat on the horizon in some shape or form for you from Nobbeskrug?
Well, you know very well that there's this policy amongst shipbuilders that they never talk about the identity of their customers.
That's right.
So that's why I can't give you any details on what customers Nobbeskrug has. But it is true that, as we all know, that Lursen is a competitor, although I know Peter Lursen for probably 25 years. I met him when I was 18. But I should normally be indeed on a Nobbeskrug and not on a Lursen. So we have to seriously explore when that can happen. But as you know, customers first. So if we have customers who filling up now the slots at Nobbeskrug, then I, as the owner, don't want to block those slots with the project for myself. Yeah. But this is something to look at a bit later.
But in the meantime, you know, Global, it's no hardship being on a 74-metre Lursen. Obviously, Global's a very well-known boat, beautifully built Lursen, because they do build beautiful boats, of course. And you bought her in 2013.
Yeah, 2013, and then 2016 did a major refit.
Yeah.
Extension from 68 to 74. And the full interior refurbishment as well. And for me, I have to admit that during the year, I never was really spending time on Global as a holiday for like a whole week or two, but it was for me a nice platform to meet interesting people and build relationships. So it was in a way even bit more of a business tool than a toy or something for holidays. So the only time I did holidays on her was between 25th December and 3rd January, when the whole world shut down. Then yeah. I was able to also take a week off, but I never do holidays during the year.
You never do holidays?
No, during the year, my only holiday where really I'm off is from 23rd, 4th December till 3rd, 4th January. But during the summer, I have a long weekend, where maybe from a Thursday night till Sunday night or Monday, and then I also work, meet people, I'll be on the phone, I'll be on email, but I don't take a week or two off during the year.
Wow. Have you always had that work ethic?
Yes, it got even worse over the last few years, and now I really want to, as I'm getting older, turned 45, now aiming towards 50, I want to achieve really a few things and position my business on a different level and on a much more stable footing as well. So if I'm very honest and reflective, I would say I even work now more hard than 5 years or 10 years ago.
Well, I mean, we'll get into your kind of CV, as it were, in a second. But I mean, you're 45 years old, 74-metre superyacht, investment company, obviously, Tenor, whose very lovely offices we're sitting in at the moment. You were hailed when you were young as the next great pioneer of German technology. So people might be listening to this thinking, that's a lot on a CV for a 45-year-old. I think what you've accomplished to this point is impossible not to admire.
It hasn't been a straight ride up. It was very volatile with a lot of ups and downs. And I'm trying very hard now to have less volatility going forward. Yes, it still was a journey which, when I look back, I don't regret, and I enjoyed the experience, even the difficult experiences. I'm not bitter about the failures or the downturns or the challenges, but it's all part of the journey, and I still enjoy what I do a lot every day and put all my energy and effort in it, because I want to grow and build Tenor into something much bigger for the benefit of not only myself, but all of our stakeholders, which is not only investors, but also thousands of employees, where we have either created jobs or saved jobs because we took over businesses. So we did have some impact in certain areas and communities as a stakeholder, and I think very often a positive one, or I would say mostly positive one.
Yeah.
So that's also something which is fulfilling and a great pleasure to build a business with people and for people. And that's what I'm about, to build and keep and maintain lifelong relationships through the business.
It's interesting you said people and relationships, because it triggered a memory in my mind. You were very kind to invite me to a dinner towards the end of last year in 2021. And it was a room of maybe 30 or 40 people, each of them fascinating financial journalists, people with amazing stories of heroism from Afghanistan, and various others, people from the Superyacht business, Superyacht owners were there as well. And you stood up at the start of that dinner and managed to not only remember everybody's name in the room, you introduced every single person in the room by name, but you also gave everyone in the room kind of a brief bio of that person's career to date. And I remember sitting there thinking, how do you, first of all, not screw up anyone's name, given there were so many nationalities in the room? And secondly, how do you keep that in your brain and just reel it out, almost extemporizing at the, standing up in front of all these people? How much did you rehearse that? Because it was wildly impressive.
Well, thank you for that. But I'm just lucky, I would say, that I have a good memory. And a good memory, especially when it comes to names and people and their backgrounds and their story. And as you can imagine, everyone invited were people who, in my view, are either friends or interesting people who I value and who I respect. And therefore, it wasn't difficult for me to remember who they are, what they did, what they're doing. And so, it's a little bit of a speciality or almost like a gimmick of mine. I do that at every dinner because I just think that it makes the dinner so much more interesting and enjoyable, because once everyone knows who is around and who sits next to you or near you on the table, it inspires much more a dialogue and conversation and new relationships and networking. It's a pity very often at those dinners, you don't really know 90% of the people, and many are shy to introduce themselves, and they don't get the benefit out of the dinner as much as they could. So that's why I said, okay, it's always great to introduce everyone. So there's a much bigger opportunity for everyone to enjoy a network.
No, it was it certainly broke a lot of ice on the table I was sitting on. It was a great way to meet everyone around you without having those slightly stilted, oh, hi, what do you do? What's your name? Conversations. Great icebreaker. When you were a young man, even when you're in high school, you were working, you're almost a professional at 15 years old, building computers. And then you quickly, when you left school, the business took off and you were in that kind of the right time at the right place to take advantage of this massive new interest in technology before obviously the dot-com bubble. What was that experience like, suddenly riding that enormous wave and then the trough inevitably that followed?
It was definitely painful to experience the downturn, because it came very sudden and very strong. However, it wasn't only triggered because of implosion of this dot-com bubble, which happened 2001, really. But the real trigger was myself, because I was at the age of 18, 19, flying so high. I had so much relationships, support, PR, so fast, so quick. Being invited by our head of state, Chancellor Helmut Kohl, to join him on a state visit to China, and then on many more state visits, and kind of join the economic advisory board of the Chancellor. And being 18, 19 years old, that in a way blew my mind, and I thought I can do everything and anything. And that's why I spread myself too thin. I did too much too quick. And the bursting of this dot-com bubble, which led to a failure of my business, was, let's say, the consequence. And maybe it was something which accelerated it. But the mistakes, I have to reflect on myself. The mistakes were done by me. And they were not only because of this market situation. And of course, I was very high profile at that time in Germany, and I was close to a very prominent politician, at least perceived like that. When I had the failure, it was again extremely high profile, and the newspapers were writing about me every single day, every week, for weeks and months, in a very negative way. So I got a punch in the face by the press, like daily. to an extent that it was almost embarrassing to go out anymore in a restaurant because everyone would look at me and they know my face. And they, so it was very hard for me and even more so for my parents who were not used to this kind of exposure. But luckily, and surprisingly, two of my investors who were with me already before in that bankruptcy situation in 2003 gave me a second chance to start again in April 2004. And in 2004, I started what is today Tenor. And I've been building Tenor since 2004.
It seems to me you've always kind of, your business life has always been front page news, hasn't it? I mean, everything that's happened in your business, you've always been that high profile character. So every time you've done well, headline, every time you've done badly, headline. So
exactly.
Usually when that happens with people, you sense the guardrails go up, but you're very candid. You're quite open with the press. There were financial journalists at the dinner we spoke about earlier. So you are fairly transparent also at the same time. You don't seem to be cautious or guarded about making comments to journalists or...
Yeah, because ultimately, even journalists are not machines, but human beings. And for me, the only way to approach them is to be open. And because ultimately, they will find out that I'm genuine, I have sincere intentions. I never stole anything from any grandmother or housewife, but I was almost 30 years professional businessman, like many thousand others who had ups and downs. I went through the same, but in my case, as you just said, if something goes wrong, it's a huge story. Very often, which happens probably every week in Europe, when a bank gets sued by someone, then no one writes about it. Probably dozens of lawsuits when you look at all the major European banks, but it's no news. But if I get a lawsuit from someone, it's suddenly big news. People think it's the end of the world. So I have to live with that. And the only way to deal with it is to be open on the one hand, but more importantly, to continue to work hard and to be successful. And at some point, hopefully we'll be that massively successful that all the question marks are gone forever. And that's what I'm very motivated on doing. And that's also one thing what drives me, because that would be a great pleasure for me as well, that you get more of the positive headline and the negative headlines are less because people wouldn't question certain things anymore. And yeah, and while this is still happening, my job is to prove the critics wrong and to continue to build my business and to perform.
And is there any part of that life in the public eye that you enjoy? Would you rather have it the other way if you could, or do you enjoy that profile that it gives you?
For my business, it would be much easier, and I think I probably would even be already much more successful if I would be below the radar screen and not in the public eye. If I could press a button and change that overnight, I would probably do it, because that way I would have 100% focus on the business, and a lot of noise, a lot of potential irritation or even handicap would go away and would be more efficient and more productive for me to build the business. But unfortunately, I have no choice, because I have been... my own decision, ultimately. I was a bit naive. I was 17 years old when I made the decision, 17, 18 years old. And I made the decision at that time to expose myself. And since then, I am, let me say, below the microscope of the journalists. And I cannot get off that radar screen anymore for the last 30 years now. For me, there's no question, because there's no choice. I have to deal with it and live with it and make the most out of it.
I think many people would be quite sympathetic. No 17-year-old I know who is being hailed as the German Bill Gates, being flown around the world by the leader of their country, wouldn't enjoy the profile that comes with that position. So, you know, you can't take it back. But at the same time, I mean, you've experienced those kind of highs that people can only really imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that I regret it or that it's all that it was all bad. There's a lot of positive things. If I wouldn't have that profile, I would have never had a chance to build this network of global relationships. I would probably not be sitting here with you today and being owner of Superyacht Shipyard, because I would probably still be in my hometown running a computer or electronics business and nothing else. So I do enjoy, and I did enjoy, diverse opportunities I came across, the most fascinating most international businessmen and politicians I've met over the last 30 years, and I've built friendships and relationships with them. And it's a really great pleasure for me to spend time with those people, deal with them in business, learn from them. And that's something which was definitely one of the benefits I got out of this.
And then Tenor Group, which was started in 2004 under a previous name, but latterly became Tenor Group. So the focus slightly shifted, didn't it, from tech to investment. Is that fair? And you started building a kind of a family of companies?
Yes. When I started in 1993, early on for the first few years, it was just tech, nothing else, electronics primarily, hardware, not software. But already from 95, 96, because of the opportunities which came, I was tempted to make a punt in a few new areas where I, honestly speaking, had obviously no experience in. So I diversified already at that time. And when I started Tenor in 2004, it was from day one a finance and investment business, which today is in a way like a private equity fund. Although we are not a fund, we are a investment company, which is almost 100% beneficially ultimately owned by myself. And we run a balance sheet, we have equity, we have debt, we manage our equity and debt, we invest, we hold businesses and build businesses, even create businesses from scratch. And we have sometimes businesses which we hold for a very, very long time, can be even infinite. So we don't have like a fund, the obligation or the pressure to sell an investment within 5 years or 7 years. Some of our businesses we own already for 12 years. And that's the difference between a private equity fund and the private equity holding company, which we are.
And can you name some of the businesses you're invested in? Obviously, I know a couple of the names. Novaskrug, obviously. La Perla is a very well-known brand. And where else do you tend to look for opportunities?
We've got a lot of investment in the technology space. We have built a few businesses in the tech space. Some of them we still have. One we sold recently for $600 million to a US company. Another one which we still own is a medical technology business, which has developed over the last 10 years the next generation of surgical robotics for surgeons to perform surgeries with the help of a robot. That's a very important and valuable business for us. We still have real estate exposure and real estate business. We have a very interesting content business, which is movie media production distribution business, where we are active across Europe, but also in the US. It's run by a very experienced, very successful person, Ron Meyer, who was 20 years running Universal, NBC Universal. So it is a diverse, like any other private equity organization, it is a diverse portfolio. And we are developing it, we are still growing it, and we are, of course, very excited that we now have a Novaskrug in the portfolio and a combination of the first shipyard we bought, Flensburger, FSG, with Novaskrug is a perfect fit, and there are indeed a lot of synergies. So it was great that we succeeded acquiring Novaskrug. And as you know yourself, it is quite rare in the yachting, the super yachting business, that such an established brand name is up for sale, where you buy a brand which has a track record of some spectacular yachts which were built, and you buy facilities which are state of the art, which are very attractive and important to have. And that's why we tried hard to get it, and we're happy that we succeeded buying it.
When the opportunity to buy Novaskrug came along, did you demur, or was it immediately like, this is something we have to do?
Well, I have to admit that I didn't find it. Our CEO recommended it, and he saw this opportunity, and we then have discussed it intensively internally, and in a relatively short order decided we'd go for it.
And it was, you not only bought it, you saved it, really, didn't you? Because the company had fallen into insolvency beforehand.
Yeah, and the key for us is now to rebuild the trust amongst customers, potentially new customers. There were customers who obviously have suffered because of the bankruptcy of Novaskrug. And for many, it is not questionable that the quality of the ships they have built is unrivaled and is at the very top.
Yeah.
But I think people need to learn and understand that the new owner is here to stay, is very committed, very serious about this, is able and willing to put financial resources behind it and support the shipyard and also support any new build project with all the usual financial guarantees and strengths which one would expect to get when you build a super yacht which costs 100 million plus euros. And that's why I'm as often as I can keen to deliver that message, because we want to grow, we want to win good customers, we want to grow the business, and we want to really get the message out that we are absolutely serious to build and grow Novus Krug, and we will invest in the shipyard. We will provide financial support going forward to make sure they can do everything they need to do. And this is a process which has just started, obviously, because we're only owning it for the last 8-9 months.
Yeah.
But we are making a lot of progress and things are coming together. So, as you can see from the news flow, the order book is filling up nicely and there's more to come in the coming months. So, we think we're on a very good track.
And actually, it's remiss of me not to mention Artifact as well, which is, of course, that was when I first met you, was at the World Superyacht Awards last year, when Artifacts picked up Motor Yacht of the Year Award and the owners were there, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
Just a lovely occasion and a great way to kind
Absolutely.
Of mark the rebirth of very well-known, yeah, very well-respected brands.
Extremely happy that we won these awards.
And yeah.
Perfect timing for us, of course. And I know that the owner was very happy as well and he enjoyed it a lot. So it was really a great occasion. And grateful for that.
As you know, all superyacht owners appreciate a shipyard that is backed. They know that there's money behind the shipyard. That always gives people confidence.
Yeah, and you have to know that the two shipyards for us are, on the one hand, definitely less than 10, probably less than 5% of our total asset base. On the other hand, they're very public. We're dealing with hundreds of employees. We have saved two very traditional German shipyards and are a very important employer in North Germany with these shipyards. We're dealing with the unions. We are dealing with the Employers' Council. So we want to not only show to customers and potential customers, but also to all the stakeholders, which are the employees, the unions, the politicians, the government, that we are really doing a good job and that this is a sustainable solution, that we will have a sustainable success and not a short-term, quick intermezzo. And so that's why our motivation here is far greater than just having a short-term financial success or benefiting in whatever shape or form from the shipyard. But we really think very long-term here. And as I just mentioned, a few more aspects come into play on top of the financial success for us. It's about reputation as well. It's about credibility. And that's why I hope that more and more international customers will understand where we are coming from and why we're doing this.
I was going to say, is a small part of it also, like you just said, reputation? You bought these really storied, pedigreed, traditional German brands with great history. So is part of it motivated by a desire to kind of invest in German infrastructure as a way of slightly washing away some of those more negative perceptions from your businesses before?
Yeah, I mean, we have done other important investments in Germany as well. We've created a few hundred jobs also in East Germany and the engineering side for our MedTech business. We invested a huge amount of money into a project which isn't successful yet, but still to come. It's the soccer club, the football club.
Hertha, yeah.
But initially, when we bought the first shipyard, FSG, it was to help a very important friend and business partner, and we weren't really prepared and we weren't really keen on that business, but we just did it to help out, to prevent the bankruptcy and to make sure the shipyard survives. Then when we had it, we were obviously trying to find a way to make it work and not to have an asset which for the next 10 years needs to be subsidized. And we figured that there's three areas where you can make on a sustainable basis still money. One is naval vessels. One is highly complex and specialized vessels for research or seismic or whatever. And the third one is super yachts, but high quality and very high end. And that's what Germany is known for. And therefore, the acquisition of Novus Krug was a very natural next step and extension for us. And now our two shipyards together, which even 2-3 years ago, when you were 2 years ago, were internally looked at as a big challenge and in a way a problematic asset. Today, across our group, everyone is very excited that we own these two assets, and there's no one today who does not believe that in the coming years these assets will increase in value and will be successful. And so that has really last 12 months, also because of the Novusburg acquisition, shifted the whole way we look at our exposure in the shipbuilding industry.
Given, obviously, macroeconomic events elsewhere might have slightly blown the froth off what was a very, very hot kind of industry. But I think there's just enough demand out there, sufficient demand to really drive a brand like Novusburg. And I think, look, people are always looking for slots at really pedigreed shipyards, and they know Novusburg is one.
Absolutely. And, you know, I spent almost one third of my time in the US, on the West Coast, but also East Coast. We have offices in Los Angeles and New York, and very close to the tech community. And an incredibly amount of wealth has been created in the last years over there. And so, therefore, you don't only have to look at Europe and Middle East and Eastern Europe and Russia, but everything which came even from young entrepreneurs in the tech space. It's just super impressive and massive proportions, where you already can see today there, especially after this COVID lockdowns and pandemic, there are many entrepreneurs who made a lot of money and who really are keen to benefit from Superyacht and from the opportunities the Superyacht gives you, which are still quite unique. Right. And so that's why I'm not worried about the future demand, although it's a shock what happened with Ukraine and the whole situation there. But nevertheless, I remain optimistic for the superyacht industry.
Yeah, absolutely. It does seem to me that tech economy is finding yachting in greater numbers now. Some of the leaders in that sector are getting into boats themselves and building very interesting boats. So, you know, where one goes, many more follow. So fingers crossed, this is finally the kind of exposure in a big way of that market to the yachting industry, because, you know, like you said, there's an awful lot of wealth being created out on the West Coast in the last few years. Do you mind if we wind the clock back a little bit again? When, you know, you were rebuilding Tenor, or you started Tenor, and this is the new business you were focusing on. And then in 2007, you were in a horrific plane crash that killed a pilot, and you ended up in intensive care with some quite serious injuries.
Yeah, I mean, I was on the way from my hometown, where I visited my parents on Christmas Day, to Hong Kong. The plane needed to do a fuel stop on the way, and the fuel stop was in Almaty in Kazakhstan. It was winter, it was extremely snowy. And apparently the wings of the plane were not de-iced properly, so there was ice on the wings. And when we took off in Almaty, I remember it very well, the plane, when it was in the air, started to shake and then turned almost 90 degrees to the right and crashed down. And the plane exploded and almost fully burned down. It's still a miracle for me, which I don't know by today, how and why I survived and how I got out of the plane, because I woke up in the snow next to the plane. And I spent some time in Kazakhstan in the hospital, and then was flown with an intensive care unit on a small plane back to Berlin, where I spent some more time in the hospital. But I recovered fully, surprisingly quickly. Okay, I had ribs and bones broken, and I had this ear was completely cut off. They found it and put it back on, and my face and skin was burned. But I recovered pretty quickly. Very sadly that the pilot died and another one got very seriously injured. But, and of course, this gives you time to think and reflect. But unfortunately, when I got out of hospital in 2008, I was in the next crash, which was the financial market, because the whole stock market and financial market crashed. There was a global financial crisis. So I didn't even have time to reflect and think a lot. I was in the middle of firefighting, trying to survive with my business. But that was snow. I mean, 15 years ago when it happened. So thank God that I survived it, and I don't have any lasting injuries. I'm extremely lucky and blessed.
I mean, it's just incredible. So what do you think that's given you, that amazing career of just these enormous peaks and troughs, obviously riding the crest of a wave and headline, you know, young tech entrepreneur, and then obviously the dot-com bubble, then rebuilding the plane crash and then a global financial crisis and then a period of rebuilding again.
It's not an easy life, not for everyone's taste, I think. It is sometimes a life of hard knocks and sometimes painful. But for me, you might say this, the pleasure and fulfillment and fascinating experience you get through this outweighs the negative parts of it. So all in all, as I said before, for me, this has been a very fulfilling journey, which, as I said, I hope going forward we will, and I'm determined and sure going forward as I'm getting older, we will have less volatility. But what I've proven to everyone in the past is that no matter what challenges we face, we never, ever give up and always move forward and find solutions for problems. And that is true for my group. That's true for my life. But that's also true for our ambitions, which we have in the super yacht business with Novus Group. And so we determine whatever it takes to make it extremely successful.
Also, given the fact that you're in a position now to help with philanthropic causes as well. There was an enormously generous donation made to the Blue Marine Foundation. So you are now a Blue Marine Yacht Club member, along with Peter Lursen and various others. So love of the ocean and conservation and sustainability is obviously something you're very, very interested in.
Absolutely. And I think it is a really good cause, especially for everyone who uses or builds or charters superyacht, because it's not only a good cause per se, but it's something for those who love the sea and who are on the sea, they should very much care about. And so one of the very important things to do, and it's the right thing to do if you're in a superyacht business, especially. So I'm pleased that I got involved with this. And even he's a competitor. I have to thank Peter for the initiative because I think it was great. And of course, thanks to you as well, because you did a great contribution and a great job to get the donation to the level where I finally ended up being. Yeah. So I do all these philanthropic activities for my foundation. In arts and culture and education, we have even done in the UK quite a bit, especially also during COVID times, where we supported children, remote education, many other things. So I've been active for over 10 years with the foundation. We always have philanthropic activities. And that's an interesting, fulfilling and enjoyable, important part as well. I think any entrepreneur should enjoy and should do.
You mentioned kids. So family life.
Yes, I'm very happily married. I married in October 2019, German wife, Christine, and who was with me at the World Superyacht Awards. And we don't have kids yet. Who knows? Might happen, might not. But I'm lucky that I have a wife who fully supports almost limitless my ambition as an entrepreneur and gives me the freedom to work hard and to travel. And very often we travel together. So she joins me when I'm on a business trip, and which is great.
Well, you need a family to share a 74-meter boat with, I think.
Yeah.
Can you ever picture a time? Can you ever just, you know, taking a break, spending 2 weeks on the boat, turning the phones off, and just relaxing? Is that even on the horizon, or is that for way later?
That's for way later. Honestly, I would be wrong. It would be not honest if I would say something else, because at least, touch wood, the health permits, next 20, 30 years, I really want to work hard and enjoy building my business. And I can't imagine that during the working year, middle of the summer, I would take 2 weeks off and do nothing. As I said, it happens a little bit between Christmas and New Year, because I feel like everything around me shuts down as well, so I can afford to do it. But during the year, I don't really do it. I'm normally 7 days a week reachable for any stakeholder, for important colleagues or customers or investors. And they do appreciate that as well.
Well, I feel like I've taken up quite a lot of your time. Your phone has been lighting up every couple of minutes. So obviously, you know, there's a few people trying to reach you. Lars, it's been a huge pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Likewise.
And I'll see you again soon. Thank you for listening to this week's Big Boat interview. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to tune in on Friday for the next installment of the Boat Briefing podcast.
This has been a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you again soon.